Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 179 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sport Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Back with another summer podcast as things ramp up. Obviously, the transfer window has been open now for there hasn't been much going on in terms of incomings to Goodison Park. But we have seen in recent days the movements of players out. So we've discussed already players whose contract ended that weren't renewed and have left. But now we have seen movements of players to other clubs, bringing in and freeing up some much needed funds, it seems. And the best place probably to start is with the transfer of Ellis Sims. There was a lot of talk around Ellis Sims potentially being part of a deal to bring in Jóqueres from Coventry. He appears to be off to Sport in Lisbon. That's pretty much over the line. There was then talk about him potentially going to Swansea. And then, obviously, we got word late last week that Coventry are going to sign him, but obviously in a transfer in its own right, the deal said to be worth up to £8 million with add-ons, but I think it was £3.5 million upfront is what we've heard through sort of Coventry media more than anybody else. As per usual, the fee was undisclosed. But I think from an accounting perspective, I think it goes down as £8 million on the books from what I understand. But Lee, thoughts on that, first of all, in terms of Ellis Sims. You know, when we sat down at the end of the season, we were looking ahead. You know, he was one of the names that we probably all thought would be moved on. Obviously, scored a goal for Everton against Chelsea, really important goal in a 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge. Do you think it's the right move for Ellis Sims to go in and cut his teeth now permanently at a Championship club?
I think it's a good move for him. I really do. I mean, let's be honest, Everton curtailed his loan spell, didn't they? What was actually proven to be a pretty decent loan spell in the Championship anyway, wasn't he? He was having a good run, and he was playing pretty regularly, scoring goals. The whole point of an actual loan, isn't it? You know what I mean? In the first place. And then due to our utter mess and desperation, we decided to bring him back because obviously we couldn't sign, even though we'd sold Anthony Gordon, as well as obviously selling Richarlison in the summer, everything else, we still haven't brought in, you know, a striker. I don't think you can describe Neil Mopé as a striker in my books, but that's another story. But we were clearly desperate. We ended his loan spell, brought him back more as cover than more than anything else. And I felt sorry for him because he didn't really get much game time, did he? But you just mentioned there, you know, he will be remembered fondly from most Everton fans, or if not all Everton fans, for that equaliser against Chelsea, which was, you know, a big part in keeping us in the Premier League. There's no doubt about it. You know, that in the end was a crucial point at Stamford Bridge. And I know Chelsea were nowhere near the force as they have been in previous years. But, you know, it was still a very, very important game going there to Stamford Bridge that night. And let's be fair, it wasn't just a tap-in either, was it? I mean, it was a hell of a goal. He showed what ability he's got there. He's a kind of a strange player for me in the fact that he looks like he should be a big number nine, but he doesn't really have much of an aggressive bone in his body, really. And he's not really, really, really good in the air either, is he? And then he's not incredibly quick, but then all of a sudden over 5 yards, you know, as he showed Koulibaly there and then shrugged him off and then slotted it in the corner. He showed there in that little sort of glimpse what he's capable of. And I think, you know, let's be honest, all in all, he probably is championship level, if we're being honest. And, you know, I'm not being funny. If I was him right now, I wouldn't want to be, you know, in the mess that is Everton Football Club. Imagine he's kept on. He's probably barely going to get a game, if only as cover or in maybe cup games and things like that. Maybe the odd substitute appearance. It's a good move. It's a good move for him. And I think for us, 8 million quid is you know, because we're so desperate for cash in the coffers right now, is a good figure for us as well. So it's a win-win scenario for me.
Yeah, and I think you're right in what you said. You know, in terms of his game time was limited for us. And we thought, we discussed it quite often, you know, the second half of last season when Sean Dyche came in, we thought maybe he should have been given more of a chance in games outside him, because obviously he started the Merseyside derby, didn't he? Started it at Old Trafford. And we thought, give him a start at home at Goodison, you know, against the so-called lesser side, when obviously, you know, we saw Neil Mopay getting the nod when there was no Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Didn't happen. So quite clearly, I think the manager didn't particularly fancy him to do a job for him. So obviously the move does not come as a surprise. The deal, I think the overall fee is a good, obviously overall fee from an accounting perspective. It's not a great deal of money, you could argue, as an upfront amount. But in the situation we find ourselves in at the moment, from a cash flow perspective, it's every penny counts. And hopefully that will then allow us to then start to make moves, which we will come on to in a minute. But Ellis Sims obviously out the door, unexpected, something which we did all think would happen. And hopefully wish him all the best. You know, we'll keep a close eye on what he does next season at Coventry. You know, a side who did really well last season, just couldn't get over the line, could they? So close to promotion, losing out in the playoff final. So I expect him to have a strong season. And I think that will be his level. But it will help him to develop further, like you say. The attitude of the kid, he got called, recalled from loan, was doing well at Sunderland. They were obviously not too happy to lose him. And he did his bit, didn't he, to keep us in the Premier League, which was really important. But another player out of the door, and this has become a little bit of a theme in terms of what we're hearing, especially, is that Everton obviously open to sell anybody for the right price, really. But academy players and the younger players also seem to be in the spotlight at the moment in terms of potential outgoings to bring in a little bit of money to help us in our quest to sign players for the first team. And that's Ishe Samuel Smith, who's just moved to Chelsea. Highly, highly rated young fullback. He's had a couple of occasions last season when he was on the bench as well. And I think if he would have come on against Bournemouth, he would have become Everton's youngest ever player. So he's highly thought of. But signed for Chelsea for £4 million, which is a big fee for a 17-year-old lad who obviously hasn't appeared for the first team. Like we say, his reputation is very, very good. A lot of sides rate him very, very highly. But that moved quickly, didn't it? You know, it came out sort of, the back end of this week, sort of Thursday, that he was going to be making the move to Chelsea. £4 million. It shows us where we're at, doesn't it? If we're, you know, once upon a time, you'd be looking to keep hold of your potential future stars from the academy, looking to bring them through, give them a pathway. What we've seen is, you know, that Everton now are very, very open to moving players on and getting decent fees for them. Now, some will argue that because of the talent that he is and because of the reputation, the potential that he's got, that £4 million is a snip. What are your thoughts on that, Lee? Because obviously we haven't seen a great deal of him at all. You know, we don't sit here and say, you know, we watch the under-21s on a regular basis. I've seen him a couple of times last season. I thought he was decent. Players, other fans, supporters are probably better suited to give probably an opinion on him and better placed. But what's your thoughts on that kind of sale for that kind of money for a 17-year-old kid?
Now, this one, compared to Sims, doesn't sit right with me. And the main reason is it stinks of short-termism. You know what I mean? It really does. It shows you the plight that we're in, that we're prepared to get the stars from our academy, the emerging stars. And from what I've heard from different sources, is that this kid's a special talent. You know, he was the only kid. He's a man. He's not a scouter. He's a Manc lad, isn't he? That we've obviously managed. You know, we've nurtured through the system. He was the only lad that was nominated in the team of the tournament, wasn't he? I think was it the under-18s? I think it was under-18s, wasn't it? For England, he was the only English player to be nominated in that. And as I said, you know, the words behind the scenes that, you know, this kid could go all the way in terms of being a Premier League footballer. Also, mate, left back, you know, we're not exactly blessed in that area right now, are we? You know, having had, you know, arguably, certainly in Leighton Baines and in snippets in Lucas Dean, two very talented left backs in you know, the last few years. We all know Mikulenko isn't really, for me, isn't really up to the required standard. Defensively, yeah, he'll do a job for you, but for me, I've always said it, he's almost like a left-footed Wan-Bissaka, isn't he? In the fact that in certain games where you're just going to be defending for the majority, yes, it'd be good to play. But when you want him to do something in the opposition side of the pitch, he doesn't really offer you very much at all. So, you know, I'm not saying this kid would have just walked straight in ahead of Mikulenko. I don't think so. But like I said before, it just stinks of short-termism. And look, Chelsea are a club right now. I've never been a big fan of theirs anyway, with the way they've operated over the years, because, you know, they've clearly doing kind of almost what City are doing now and bought several titles. But right now, there's a real muddy waters around this PIF fund and their involvement with both Newcastle and Chelsea. And that just doesn't sit right with me. That the fact they've managed to exit all these players out in a short space of time, the fact they're, you know, now bringing this kid on, I can guarantee you right now, Chelsea will see this as a way to make a profit on someone. I genuinely don't think they've got this kid's future going, oh, this kid's going to be the next Ashley Cole. Look, he may prove me wrong. He may go on to be a top Premier League left back. But for me, Chelsea see this as a profit-making exercise. You know, you see what they're doing now with this Lewis, you know, with Lewis Colwill, who had a superb loan spell at Brighton. There's room, you know, he looks a real talent. There's rumours now City are bidding £30 million for him. And that's the way Chelsea operate, isn't it? It's almost like, you know, a trading market in itself. You know, how else can we make money? And they'll see it as £4 million. In our eyes, it'll be like £4 million, great, that's money in the coffers. But for them, that's short change, isn't it? So they'll be thinking, can we turn this kid, can we get him out on loan straight away? You know, to possibly a Premier League club. Let's say he has a good season like Colwill does, and all of a sudden he's worth 15, 20 million. And, you know, we're not in the position to do that. You know, we should be looking to do that exercise ourselves. Instead, we're not. You know, and we've sold him, you know, to the highest bidder. And you know, I'm hoping this doesn't come and bite us in the arse, because it could well do. It just shows, like I said before, exactly where we are. We're trying to get as many pennies and pounds in the pockets right now to be able to try and scrimp enough money together to go and, you know, to go and improve the squad. And it's desperation, really. That's what it is, isn't it?
It is. And the short-term mentality is very much that. We're in a situation where we, unfortunately and terribly so, we can't afford to look too far ahead. Because of mistakes of the past, because of the fact that we have to get the stadium finished. So a lot of the money which is coming for players in say the last 12 months or so, obviously we've seen some big money moves out of the club. Obviously Anthony Gordon being being the most recent one. We've recouped money for it, obviously, for Moise Keane, Richarlison, players like that. A lot of money has gone towards the stadium, is quite clear. So in terms of what we can do in this window, we are massively, massively hamstrung, because from a profit and sustainability side of things, things have improved quite a lot in the last 12 months or so since the sale of Richarlison. Things have improved. So it's not so much the fact that with those guidelines and rules that we can't spend money, it's the fact that the money's just not there, because it is going towards the stadium. And we just haven't got that cash flow. That's what it seems. But the short-term mentality is very much what is going on at the club. I think the Sean Dyche appointment was very much that, with all due respect to him. And he's did a fabulous job keeping us in the Premier League. But I don't think he was brought in with the intent of him being here for, say, 4 or 5 years. In my personal opinion, he could prove us all wrong, and maybe he does. But that's just my personal opinion on that. But I mean, Paddy Boylan's come out this morning with an article in the Athletic, and we hope in the second half, by the way, that Paddy should be joining us for a chat, which would be interesting, obviously, to get his take on what we've been discussing in the first half. But the short-term mentality is very much that. And I think, looking at, obviously, beyond now, the players that we've sold up to this point and money we've saved from players who've left on, obviously, since the contract have ended, Jerry Mina, obviously Connor Cody, Andros Townsend, those kind of players, Asmir Begovic. A lot of money is being saved in wages as well. But the latest player that we've been linked with, and this seems to be gathering pace in the last sort of 24 hours or so, is Ashley Young. Happy birthday, by the way, Ashley Young, 38 today. Just want to get that one in there. But he's a player who, obviously, Aston Villa the last couple of seasons, Inter Milan, Manchester United, Villa previously, and he's a player who has had a fabulous career. You know, he's a utility player. He's done particularly well, I think, in terms of the fact that obviously he's won trophies throughout his career. But what's your take on that, Pete? As you just appear in the bottom corner of the screen, Ashley Young, free transfer. It does appear to be fairly close. There was talk that he was actually floating around Finch Farm for quite a bit last week. We obviously haven't got a great deal of money. He's turned 38 as of today, as we record on the Sunday. What's your thoughts on that deal? Are you happy with it if it means that the funds that we do have go into attacking positions?
Well, I think you've kind of answered the question. I'm happy with it, depending on what it is, because I think I joked to you boys yesterday, if it's we've signed Ashley Young and there's 24 hours of the window to go, are we going to bring in a striker to compete with Dom or as backup for Dom? Then that's catastrophic. If it's we've made a shrewd move early on for a seasoned pro who actually played, despite his age, played a great deal of football last season, that can offer cover either side at fullback, it could be a really, really smart move. And it could really help the squad. So I guess at this stage, we're very much in the dark, aren't we? You know, like we were saying on one of the recent pods, we're kind of going into windows now with actually very little clarity on what's possible and what our position is. There's just so much unknown around the window. But the sources seem very, very strong. There's kind of multiple reports that this is essentially a done deal now, that we're just waiting to be announced. But yeah, I think time will tell exactly what it is. Is it a shrewd move, or is this a desperate scramble?
See, for me, I mean, I'm not totally averse to it, just given the fact that we've lost players with experience in obviously Connor Cody and Yerry Mina. So in terms of the leadership group, as they tend to call it, you've got Seamus Coleman, James Tarkowski and Jordan Pickford. But we do need a bit more experience in there. Aston Villa fans, they were raving about Ashley Young last season. I think 31 appearances he made. Is it 29 in the Premier League, 23 starts. He was in the squad 38 times, obviously very, very fit. They raved about him, absolutely raved about him. Now, some people would say, well, why didn't you give him another year then? They're on a slightly different trajectory than we are. Let's get it right. But from an experience perspective and what he can bring, I'm not totally averse to it. It's, you know, someone who can play left and right back, can also play, you know, in a wide position on the left and right hand side as well in an attacking perspective. But Lee, what is your thoughts on Ashley Young? I say Pete's given his, I've given mine. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because this is where we are, unfortunately, in terms of finances.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you boys really on this one. And initially, when you first find out the news, you're thinking, oh my God. You know, when you see the likes of Newcastle going after Harvey Barnes and people like that, and then, you know, players that you would have in a heartbeat at Everton, you know, you're thinking, you know, we are scraping the barrel here. But when you actually, you know, take that emotion out of it and look into it, it's actually, you know, for me, it's kind of a shrewd sign in a way. He can play left back, he can play right back. He seems to be a fit lad. He stays fit. He looks after himself clearly. He's got a good attitude. I think he'll be more, well, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I think he'll be more sort of Gareth Barry as a season pro, and maybe have that sort of impact. Well, you'd be hoping so anyway. Then you know, other players we've brought in of a certain age in that area who've been an absolute waste of time, haven't we? Do you know what I mean? So I think it will prove to be a shrewd coverage. I mean, look, you've got to remember, I think they expected Tom Davis to sign the contract as well. And Tom's, you know, you'd say a versatile player, isn't he? He can play across various positions, can cover certain positions. You'd probably say that the same now with Ashley Young. So, you know, with Tom going out, have they then thought, look, we need someone who can play, you know, multiple positions, not just obviously, you know, where he has done in the latter end of his career at fullback, but also, you know, if you need him to do a job in midfield, he could probably do you a job in midfield as well, couldn't he? Either playing left mid or right mid. So, you know, I think what they've done, by all accounts, he's been there for, you know, a few days, maybe, you know, at Finch Farm or a week. I think Dyche will have had a look at his fitness, you know, and seen, you know, as he got it in him to play another season in the Premier League. And, you know, by the sounds of it, they clearly think he has. So, and that leadership point's an important one for me, Mike. Losing the likes of Cody and Mina, who from the outside looking in, doesn't take a genius to work out, were probably two very strong characters in that dressing room. And I was quite vocal about Cody going. I know he sort of split the fan base towards the end, but I would much rather have kept Connor Cody and shipped out someone like Michael Keane and got a fee for him, and even Holgate for that matter as well. He will do a good job at Leicester because he's a real character. And, you know, for me now, you look at that changing room, you'd probably say Seamus Coleman, possibly Tarkowski, are the only real natural leaders now in that squad. And we all know, you know, before the likes of Cody and people like that, how fragile we were mentally as a squad anyway. So losing those two characters is a biggie. And that's what Young brings you as well. You know, he's clearly a vocal lad as well. He's played, obviously, at the highest level at Man United as well. So as I said, it could prove to be a shrewd bit of business, almost, like I said, almost a little bit Gareth Barry-esque, couldn't it? Even if we just have him for a season.
Yeah, it could. It could. And, you know, let's see how it progresses over the next couple of days or so, because it's certainly gathered pace as of yesterday. So we'll see where that goes. If it's obviously going to happen, it should be the early part of next week. But just to sort of ground off this first half, Pete, because like I said earlier, we're hopeful that Paddy Boylan will be jumping on for the second half. In regards to attacking signings, there still appears to be quite a bit of noise around Rodrigo, probably more than anybody else, in terms of obviously the player from Leeds. He's got a very, very small release clause in terms of, you know, the modern football. I think it's just over £3 million. Now, a player who's 32 years of age, but did score, I think, 15 goals last season, which is a tremendous tally, I think, for any player, let alone a player playing in a side like Leeds United, who were like us in a relegation battle, weren't particularly, you know, firing on all cylinders for a large part of the season. Had numerous managers as well over the course of last season. What's your take on that, Pete, in terms of potentially getting him in? Because there's a little bit of talk around maybe, I think, Qatari clubs are looking at him. He's got a decision to make. I know Everton are definitely in the mix for him. There's definitely, it seems to have been an offer made to Leeds United and to Rodrigo. Would you, again, short term, it's a short-term option. short-term mentality. Would you be happy with that deal, with him coming in, given his pedigree in the Premier League?
Well, it's an interesting one, because as you say, he ticks lots of boxes. You know, he's a finisher. He's been consistent now in the Premier League for three years?
Yeah.
You know, he is a top-level player, and he's got work rate as well. He works hard. You know, he's come from a Leeds team that are used to having to defend. He puts a shift in. Whenever I've watched him play, you know, he's always present. He's always a threat. So, and also, yeah, he can play up top, but he can also play in that 10. And I think that tends to be, I know, like you said, that Leeds have had several managers, but that tended to be where he played more often than in that kind of central role. So I think for us, if Rodrigo is the player that's going to be back up to Dom or competing with Dom, I'm not sure, because we're so reliant on Dom's presence, Dom's aerial ability, his ability to hold up the ball, his ability to be aggressive, to be a player that can, you know, occupy two centre halves. And I'm not sure whether Rodrigo would give us that. If Rodrigo would be another option, you know, for a different style of play, or someone that could potentially play just off Dom, because you know you've got the work rate in him, and also you've got the attacking quality. And, you know, potentially Doucouré can play deeper, or Doucouré can have a slightly different role for us. I think it could be a brilliant signing. That could be exactly the type of signing we need, because, you know, you look at our team in terms of attacking threat. How often have we spoke about how reliant we became after Dyche came in on Dwight McNeil for that bit of quality, and that, you know, for whatever reason, Damari Gray seems to have fallen out of favour, and you've not got the same level of performance out of Damari Gray, perhaps because he's not favoured quite in the same way as he was by Frank Lampard, by Sean Dyche. So we need more quality in the attacking third, but it has to be, for me, in and around Dom, as well as competition for Dom, and strong competition for Dom.
I think obviously he's obviously just one player, and a player, like you say, who's versatile. He can play as a central striker, he can play as a 10, can play on the right wing as well, which is all positive things. So I think, given our predicaments, we need players who can play in a variety of roles. We mentioned Ashley Young in terms of his versatility. James Garner, we saw at the back end of last season, you know, fantastic, by the way, both him and Jared Branthwaite picking up the under-21 European title as well for England. And we saw James Garner playing right back there. So these kind of players who can play in a variety of positions will be helpful for Everton. And if you can get someone in, like we said, who's come in, like you said, PC's played three seasons in the Premier League, Leeds signed for big money. Big money. It was around about sort of 25, 26 million pounds, 30 million euros. It's a big sign. And you just think that having someone like him who knows the Premier League, who's a goal scorer, he's shown that, who is versatile, could be a really good signing for a small amount of money, when obviously we are sort of scraping round. And given the fact, obviously, we mentioned at the start of the show, the sales of Ellis Sims and Samuel Smith as well, which has given us a little bit of money to sort of play with. This is the sort of ballpark that we're sort of fishing in at this moment in time. So it's, again, you know, things I'm sure will change. But, you know, with this money coming in at the back end of this week, you would expect to see, well, any normal club you would expect to start to see movement in terms of incomings over the next sort of 7 days or so, because I'm sure Sean Dyche now is very, very keen on getting players through the door. Obviously, we're heading over to the for that game and a bit of a training camp over on the French-Swiss border. So I'm sure he's going to want to get players in as quickly as he can, even just taking one or two over before we get the international lads back, to just get a little bit of fresh blood in, make everyone feel a little bit better, make him feel a little bit better as well as manager, that he's got new players to work with, and he can look to improve things in terms of the playing side of the club. And we can then look to obviously have a solid pre-season. But there will be other names brought up, other names mentioned, other players will come out of nowhere. We don't know what's going to happen with further outgoings as well. You know, there are, as I said at the start of the show, Everton seems to have a price for everybody. So, and Everton are probably willing to sell anybody if the right money comes in. Mason Holgate mentioned yesterday that maybe Everton will look to move him on. He was linked with a loan move to Sheffield United, going back about sort of 7-10 days ago. You want to try and recoup transfer fees for players to help us out, to be honest with you. We've got the likes of obviously Andre Gomez coming back in. What do we do with him? Dele Alli's come back to Finch Farm. He was there the first day of pre-season. What do we do with him? So there's a lot of conversations, a lot of work to be done, a long way to go in the window. But we said this on the last show, we can't afford to go into that first game of the season against Fulham and be in a worse position as a playing squad. We've got to go in there and be competitive. We can't afford to throw away points and throw away games before that transfer window closes and do deals really, really late. You know, we've got to try and get some work done as early as we can. But fully expect things to kick on as this week goes on. But a fella who might be in the know is Paddy Boylan. As I say, should be joining us for the second half. So we'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. I'm delighted to say joining me for the second half, as we've lost Liam Pete to extracurricular activity, should we say, is Athletics' Paddy Boylan. Paddy, how are you on this Monday morning?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are things with you?
Not bad. You know, obviously the Everton circus continues. It's always fun and games, and obviously it's proven to be a difficult transfer window up to date, really. And it's great to have yourself on, because obviously an Arsenal that you put out yesterday on the Athletic covers what we'd like to have a bit of a chat about. So let's jump straight in. We covered in the first half with the other two lads in regards to the fact that Everton have sold a couple of players the back end of last week, Ellis Sims and obviously Samuel Smith, who's gone across to Chelsea, the young 17-year-old fullback. And your article touches on this in regards to obviously those players going, obviously Anthony Gordon going in January and the money that's coming from academy players.
Yeah.
Just to sort of fill people in. For people, obviously, Everton fans who look at the window so far, look at the fact that there's been no movements in terms of incomings, but we are starting to see players leaving now for some amount of money. You said in the article, it's fair to say now that Everton are sort of looking at the shorter term in an effort to almost survive. That's how it seems. Yeah. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I'm not sure that's because of any overarching vision for the future of the club. I actually believe that a lot of the current incumbents at a football level, so people from maybe Kevin Thelwell down, would actually want to build steadily over a long period of time. I just think we've gone to a situation now where the financial situation the club finds itself in is such where they're having to recoup as much money as possible, whilst also battling relegation. And that lends itself to this kind of focus on one level, taking what you can for prospects, academy prospects, recouping money there so you don't have to further trim the first team squad. And then I suppose reinvesting that into players that might be able to contribute over a short period of time to get Everton through this really sticky situation where there's not much money and they are struggling for survival in the Premier League.
In regards to the money situation, obviously, again, you know, linking back to what you were saying in your article, do you think it's pretty much a case at the moment that every single player at the football club, from, you know, these academy players up to the first team, every single player is literally for sale almost, and it's got a price?
I think most of them do. I think about just about every single one of them will do. And that's actually the case for a lot of modern clubs. I'd say there are very few exempt from that. But maybe there's a little bit more of a necessity on Everton's side because of where they find themselves financially to cash in on assets. So I always see stuff on social media in particular which talks about, well, why have we sold player X instead of player Y? And the example here I'd use would be, let's say, Neil Maupay versus Ellis Sims. I think if you surveyed 100 Evertonians and said, who do you want to keep at Everton, Neil Maupay or Ellis Sims? I wouldn't mind betting that Ellis would win that quite comfortably, maybe 3-1. But in order to sell these players, they've got to have a market, they've got to have interest. And I don't necessarily think it's a case of Everton saying, we don't want Ellis Sims anymore, or we don't want Ishe Samuel Smith anymore. I think it's just a simple fact that those players are in demand. Ellis Sims at championship level predominantly, Ishe Samuel Smith more or less across the board because of how highly regarded he was. And when Everton needed to make sales quickly, that's where the interest came from. So is everyone up for sale? I wouldn't go as far as to say that, but what I would say is that I think most players have a price, and that's the case in the modern game, even more so when it's Everton Football Club and you've got this financial predicament that kind of continues to loom large over all their business, both incomings and outgoings.
Given the financial side of things, obviously we know what's coming up in October in regard to this independent panel. And the case, which is obviously being sent across and brought about by the Premier League. In regards to the profits and sustainability side, because obviously as fans, we sit there and we look at, well, hang on, you know, we sold Richarlison for big money last summer, which paid for, if you want to look at it in a layman's terms, paid for the business that we did ourselves in the last summer. We then look at players who've also gone since then, Anthony Gordon for big money in January, with nothing then reinvested. We've also seen players on big contracts in the same time go. So obviously, James has gone in recent times. You then see Yerry Mina, who's just obviously gone. He was on big money. Connor Cody wasn't on a small wage either. So from a profits and sustainability side of things, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, well, obviously all the talk is we've got financial issues, of course. From that side, if we looked at that in isolation, is it a case that Everton just simply haven't got, say, money in the bank in relation to be able to go out and say, well, we can put that, say, a down payment down on player X, as opposed to we haven't got money to spend because we're going to potentially be in trouble again from a profits and sustainability viewpoint?
I think this is quite a complicated answer, so bear with me. But I prefer to see this not as a profits and sustainability issue in its entirety, or as, let's say, for example, a cash flow issue in its entirety. And I know people have the various theories as to why Everton are where they are. My cop-out answer is I think it's everything. I think it's a little bit of everything. I think, in general, the kind of language I've used in articles is a club stretched beyond its means in a whole number of different facets and a whole number of different regards. So the first thing is you're building a stadium. But at the moment, and this is a £760 million stadium, as Mashiri's already indicated, and indicated fairly recently. So that's a £760 million stadium that at the moment, at the time of recording this, is not funded. It's not. It's funded to an extent. Whatever's gone before has been done out of Mashiri's own pocket. But there's been a bridging loan from Blythe Capital, Andrew Bell's company, to kind of get them towards a point where they can then put their MSP money in, and that continues on. But what I mean is there's no stadium financing partner right at this moment in time, or certainly not one that the club have announced. So you've got that situation. You've got an everyday kind of cash flow situation where you look at things being taken out of the club, like, for example, still a very high wage bill, even by Premier League standards. I think even a couple of seasons ago, Everton were eighth highest in the league around Leicester. So a really high wage bill. You've also then got things like the war in Ukraine and the removal of kind of key sponsors, talking there about USM and Megafon. COVID, I still think the impact of COVID is being felt financially when you look at some of the accommodations Everton had to make during that period to just get through. When you factor all this into the melting pot, you've got a situation where, as I was saying, you've got a club almost kind of stretched beyond its means. I do think they believe the wage bill is too high and needs to come down further. So there's one thing. In terms of the FFP situation, my understanding was that for the season just gone, 22-23, Everton felt they needed to make more of a profit on players, and that's why they were looking for quicker sales. That's even including Anthony Gordon and Moise Kane. I think Nathan Broadhead and Niels Nkunku went in that same window. And from my perspective, that's purely because you've got a situation where you've still, right at the start of the FFP, the three-year FFP calculation, you've still got a big, meaty loss, which is in part COVID-induced. So you're looking at 100 million or so there. The club lost 45 for the year, for the season 21-22. When you put those, when you aggregate those two sums together on their own before deductions, you're looking at 150 million all in. And then the permitted number by Premier League standards is 105. We reported last season that Richarlison was, well, we reported a big sale needs to be made before June 30th last season. And as we all saw, Richarlison went on June the 30th last season. So that kind of satisfied the very bottom line for that year, as kind of Everton understood it. Obviously, the Premier League have got a different view on that, but let's see what the Independent Commission comes up with. But what happened there is that we moved into a new financial year in July the 1st, and just about all of Everton's summer business was done from that point on. So there you've got substantial fees for Amadou Onana, 30-odd million. You've got Dwight McNeil, 20 million. Neil Mopay, I think the fee that's in the public domain, it's slightly higher than the one Everton actually paid for him, but he's still looking at 10, 11-ish million for him. When you accumulate those numbers together, they are quite substantial. So I think it was still a consideration for the financial year that's just gone and just finished on June the 30th. What you can say is that you look at all the money that's come in those two cycles, and Everton clearly are in a much better position with FFP than they were a year or two ago. And future cycles, so for next season on, should look much rosier, should look much healthier. But I think in the short term, there was still a focus on bringing in profit where possible. As I was saying, you've got the stadium situation. The stadium still needs to be funded. And the very early indications were that, look, a lot of that money for, let's say, Anthony Gordon wasn't available to be reinvested. That was already accounted for. And I still don't think, as we recall today, Mike, that there's an awful lot of money here for Everton in terms of going out and smashing in the window. So it's tough. I think it's tough. I think it's tough for Evertonians looking at this and seeing the club losing a lot of players, in some cases talented players. I also think it's probably tough for people at the club who are working there trying to make this happen and kind of being told, well, look, we can't be in a relegation battle again. Because at the end of the day, the best way to get out of a relegation scrap is to invest in your squad and to bring in quality. Right now, Everton haven't done that.
And that brings us quite nicely onto, doesn't it, looking at potential income ones, because as we said at the start, and as you've alluded to then, you know, it's very, very difficult for Everton. The current landscape is difficult to actually bring players in. And like you say, for us to try and not be in the same situation we found ourselves in for the last two seasons, you would think that you've got to reinvest somewhere to improve that squad and make us more competitive, even to the, you know, to the extent that we have a season where we finish, say, between 12th and 14th, as opposed to going into the last game of the season fighting for your life. You know, I'm sure we'd all be fairly satisfied, which is terrible to say, but we're fairly satisfied with a season where we do, you know, we've in the last sort of four or five weeks, we're not looking over our shoulder thinking, hang on, we've got to get wins here and we're safe. That's what I'm looking for. But to do that, like we said, we've got to look to try and bring players in and make that squad better and more balanced. I mean, Sean Dyche has alluded to this. He still feels that the squad is imbalanced in certain areas. You know, we've lost players. We've already mentioned, obviously, Yerry Mina, Connor Cody, two leaders. We've lost a player in Tom Davis, who was probably seen as a cheap squad player, and they could have done without losing him. To be perfectly honest, probably a player like him leaving hasn't helped things either. But the most recent names that we've been linked to, well, as I've said, Ashley Young seems to be the one. Came out of nowhere, really, the sort of the back end of last week, didn't he? And obviously, out of three, turned 38. Yesterday. What are your thoughts on that, Paddy? I mean, I've seen as well, Luton have been offered him, potentially spoken to him. Do you think that's something that the club would look to do purely on the basis of maybe one, Premier League experience is a leader, and two, a player who can play in a variety of positions as well?
Yeah, I think ideally, if you are planning for the future and you are looking to build steadily over time, you probably don't add a 38-year-old utility fullback into the picture, because obviously there's a pretty probably be a pretty substantial wage for Ashley Young, given he's just come from Aston Villa, another club that pays massive wages. So that's the ideal situation. But as we all know, and as we've already discussed, I don't think this is an ideal situation and kind of far from it. You talk there about the squad and the work that needs to be done on it. And I think what we've got to realise here is that in just about every department, there's an issue to solve. So you go through and you look at the goalkeeping situation and you've lost a very steady, reliable number two in Asmir Begovic. Do they promote Joao Virginia? Do they look to give Andy Lonergan a bit more time? What do they do there? Do they look to bring in another number two? And as I understand it, they've looked at all of those options, particularly do they promote Virginia or do they bring somebody in? You've then got a situation in defence where Seamus Coleman's on his way back from injury. You've got Patterson at right back. James Garner could kind of play there. So you could muddle through a right back, in my opinion. But you've lost two centre backs in Cody and Mina. Mina, as we know, had a massive impact in the second part of the season to help keep Everton up. I think that's one of the things that helped Everton edge over the line, to be honest. Massive presence whenever he's there. Massive presence in the dressing room. And Connor Cody likewise, but with the first half of the season. So you've lost a couple there. I think the rest of the cohort's not particularly strong when you look at the central defensive options. Branthwaite, I think, is a real prospect, and there's a lot of excitement about what he could do. Tarkovsky's steady enough, but some of the others there you're kind of a bit unsure about. And then you go on to left-back, where there's only one left-back at the club in the upper echelons at senior level in Mykolenko, and there's clearly needs to be something there, and they will look at the options at left back. So Young kind of presents himself as this kind of utility man that could probably play in two or three of those positions, and they'll almost certainly value that leadership, that versatility, the ability to, I would say, deliver a good ball into the box, which is kind of a fundamental of Dyche's football, as we know. And that's before we get into other parts of the pitch. So I think it's a legit link. I'm pretty sure there is interest in Ashley Young, as with other clubs who've also spoken to him. Whether or not he's the one they go for, or whether or not he would even agree to join, I don't know. I think that's still to be decided as we record. But I think he's one name in the frame to kind of fill a squad berth. And it would be filling the squad berth on relatively low cost compared to some of the other options. If that kind of signing, a utility man that can cover Mykolenko, Patterson, Coleman, etc., if that kind of signing gave Everton the wiggle room to do more in the attacking third, where I think they really need it, then I think that's probably a compromise I'd take personally, looking at it from my perspective on the outside. Because I do think, fundamentally, the side last season failed most because it was lacking in threat, it was lacking in goals. Quite often we were looking at where the goals were going to come from, even. And in the end, they kind of muddled through with kind of a worldie here from Coleman, a worldie there from Ducore, the defenders mucking in with some goals from set pieces. And quite evidently, there needs to be more across the front three or two. So I still think that's the priority position. What I'd also say is, if they were to lose Onana from the midfield after Davis, you're probably also looking at them needing to do something there in the centre midfield too. You leave yourself quite light there. So there's a lot of moving parties, a lot of moving pieces, not a lot of budget. And I think that means that you are likely to see links to some of these kind of these players on frees or loans that might help free up room elsewhere.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, obviously, and on the Onana point, if we did lose Onana, it does create a bit of an issue. And I know people, and we've said it ourselves, we look at, okay, what could get you a quick profit, really, after one season in the Premier League. He had a lot of suitors before he signed for the club. Obviously, West Ham were heavily linked. He was close to West Ham. You look at it now, West Ham have been mentioned again. You know, Chelsea, you know, Arsenal, Declan Rice is on the brink of being announced there. United, you know, a lot of these clubs are being mentioned. So he's a player who you would think we could make some quick money on. However, there is this obviously this sell-on clause, so much would go back to Lille, so that eats into the profits. But then it leaves a hole when you still sell or obviously get some deals done for those attacking positions. And I mean, the attacking third is the biggest issue. It was last season. You know, we had the issue obviously with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. We know how good he is on his day when he's fully fit. He showed that when he came back. I think Brighton away, he was absolutely superb. You know, what a performance. And it's just a shame with Dom, the fact he's had so many issues. However, it's got to be said, he's put the work in pre-season. He went over to Germany, obviously to do some work over there in this special clinic. And he is putting the work in. But obviously, that central striker position, the wide attacking positions are key. And we've seen a lot of links to Leeds players, haven't we? You know, since the window opened, really. One of them that's been strongly linked, and it just won't go away, is Rodrigo at Leeds. And there seems to be quite a small release clause there in terms of it's just over £3 million or £3.8 million, I think, for a player who scored 15 goals last season in the Premier League, has got a wealth of experience playing at the highest level. And with obviously how small that fee is that something that you feel has got a real potential to it?
I think that kind of signing has got a real potential to it. I think that's the kind of deal, alongside the loans, alongside the freeze, that Everton have been looking at during this period where money is tight. I think with him, the challenge is going to be the low release clause and how many clubs that brings into the fray for him. Because if Leeds were tapping him around for 15, 20 million, then you've got a really shallow pool of clubs that could take him and then pay the wages. But as we know, he's still a Spain international. He's got goals under his belt at Premier League level. I think somebody who could probably play in a number of different positions for you as well, kind of leading the line with somebody else or in a slightly more withdrawn role. Bielsa bizarrely used to play him as a central midfielder, although my personal take on that was an experiment that really did not work for Leeds. But there's a lot to like about Rodrigo, even in that kind of 31, 32 age bracket. So that is the kind of deal I think Everton would be looking at this moment in time. And I think he's the kind of player that almost certainly would appeal. I think that would be a positive step if Everton were to sign him. My concern would be the interest, the reported interest, and reported by other outlets, I must say, from elsewhere in Rodrigo, from, let's say, for example, Qatari and Saudi clubs, and what they can pay in terms of wages. I mean, it was once the case that Premier League clubs could just kind of basically outbid everybody. Mm. And in some cases, that's still true over transfer fees. But the emergence of Saudi and Qatari and other Middle Eastern clubs onto the market, I think that means that you've now got a situation where they can offer top dollar and kind of other incentives like lifestyle and tax breaks and all that kind of stuff. So does Rodrigo see himself as being a bona fide Premier League player still? He should do. Or does he want to take a kind of more money on offer elsewhere and go and live the life in Dubai or Qatar for a few years? I think we'll kind of have to see there. But that's the kind of deal Everton will look at. And I think that will be a positive step in this case.
Yeah, and as you say, you know, the interest from the likes of obviously Qatari clubs, Saudi clubs is a potential spanner in the works. You've seen it a lot already this summer in terms of what kind of money, not only by the way, are they paying the players, but what clubs are getting for players as well. You know, we've got 1 year left on the contract. You know, Ruben Neves went for massive money, didn't he, from Wolves. There's talk of Damari Gray, a player who, you know, Sean Dyche, not particularly, I wouldn't say he favours him, to be honest. I think maybe the defensive side of his job, he's not particularly too keen on. And we didn't see him a great deal as the season went on. Came back in, obviously, last game of the season and played centrally. obviously this talk around this comment he made on Samuel Smith's Instagram post yesterday in regards to his move to Chelsea. Do you think that he's a player who splits opinion? On his day, terrific, scored some terrific goals. You know, we look back to Man City last season, Arsenal the season before. He's got a decent goal in his locker. He's got pace, and in a side that's got very little pace in Everton, he's a one outlet that we do have that you think could actually do something and is obviously ideal fit for the Premier League. Do you think that he is the kind of player, going back to obviously Everton moving players on, that Everton will be open to sell, given maybe the lack of favour Sean Dyche has toward him?
Yeah, I'd be very shocked, because what we were saying earlier about the kind of the financial predicament of the club, you add in with Damari Gray that he's not a guaranteed starter under Sean Dyche. I actually don't think he probably will get into Dyche's strongest 11 on paper right now. I think a lot of that boils down to what Dyche values in a player and the kind of things he wants from each particular position. So from his wide midfielders, he wants real hard work. You look at Iwobi, you look at Dwight McNeil. The runners, they get up and down for you all day. And then they've got that thing of getting the ball out of their feet and throwing a cross in. McNeil obviously does it more successfully than Iwobi, you'd argue. Whenever they've spoken, Dyche and Gray on the subject, they've always spoken about kind of Dyche wanting more balance in Gray's game. And I take that personally to mean the extra grit, the extra kind of defensive acumen and solidity. Now, obviously, he didn't ever really feature, from what I can remember, in the wide areas under Dyche. It was more or less exclusively as a centre-forward. And we know Gray is not a centre-forward. You know, he's a wide player or bust, really. So I think that's another one you look at and you think he's not really got his place positionally in this Everton side right now, at least not under Dyche. And there has been interest. We know there's been interest from not just clubs in the Premier League, but much further afield. He's obviously away at the moment. Gray doing very well for Jamaica in the Gold Cup and impressing there. So whether that brings other clubs to the table, we'll have to wait and see. But just going back to what we were saying about finances, I think Everton would listen to offers for most players. Right now. I say listen, let me accept. I think they would listen to offers for most players right now. And Gray's kind of not really been kind of a fundamental under Dyche. So I think it wouldn't shock me massively if he were to go.
Yeah, and the hope is obviously any deals that do get done in terms of outgoing players from the first team squad are done pretty quickly, and we're not going into the start of the season waiting to do our business. I think that's a major concern, obviously, when there's not a great deal of money floating around at the club, that Everton throw away two or three games almost at the start of the season because they haven't finalised the squad in terms of bringing in players.
They can't afford to do that. It could have cost them last season. Very nearly did. When you look at them, Neil Mopai joined in late August, but because of a bank holiday, you'll remember, he wasn't registered against Leeds. So I think his first game for Everton, if I'm not mistaken, was actually fell into September. Yeah. So Everton played the whole month of August without a recognised striker of any kind. It was false nines. It was Dwight McNeil came off the bench to do it against Forest, I think. Anthony Gordon did it for a while. That could have, you're talking there, the points dropped in that period could have ended up resulting in Everton losing their Premier League status. Mm-hmm. And we have to assume that the margins can be relatively tight again. Yeah. They may well be relatively tight again. So kind of time is of the essence here. The quicker Everton move, the better. But I think the position they've got in, for example, if you take loan deals, most clubs looking to loan players now are first assessing them in pre-season to see whether they can contribute or whether they need to go back into the market themselves. And what we often find with loans is that loans happen towards the end of the window when those clubs have made decisions and they need to get them out quickly. So Everton may still be active towards the end of this window. What they absolutely need is a few soon to kind of hit the ground running and be fully embedded with Dyche's style. So there aren't the worries and the issues from last season. So let's see. I think there's obviously a timer here. And I think the other thing is that fans see the team the squad pictures from them going back to Finch Farm, and they noticed like they may be missing internationals in the main, but it's a threadbare squad.
Yeah,
it's a really threadbare squad. So they need to do business, and they need to do big business in an incoming sense as quickly as possible, I'd argue.
Exactly right. Obviously, the first day of pre-season last Thursday, you look around and you look at the bodies and look at the first team players, especially. Obviously, there was quite a few of the younger players who were taking part in that, and it did look very, very thin on the ground. Like you say, still quite a few international players who have yet to report back. I'd assume the likes of Jordan Pickford would probably be back at some point this week. And you've seen other clubs' international players sort of trickle back over the course of the weekend and today. So, you know, it will look a little bit fuller, but when you've lost a fair few players already, with them being out of contract, players going back, obviously Connor Cody going back to Wolves and obviously being sold to Leicester, it does look particularly thin. So as a fan base, obviously we're eager to see a couple of players through the door, especially given obviously we're off on a bit of a pre-season trip over the next few days, and Sean Dyche is going to want to get players in and give them as long as a pre-season under him as he possibly can. But just to finish off, Paddy, if you were a betting man, would you fancy anyone through the door this week?
Well, the first thing to say is I'm not a betting man, so please nobody listen to any advice that I give in a betting sense. I think we're probably about 50-50 with it. Listen, that might sound as though it's a cop-out, but I don't think there's anything that's there ready to be announced right now. I know for a fact they're working hard. They're trying to get people in, as they have been for a while. As I say, I don't think Samuel Smith and Sims going massively shifts the dial with regards to what they can do in a financial sense now for new players in the market. But things should start to move. And I think they should start to move fairly soon. And I hope they do start to move fairly soon, because I think it has been a tough start to the summer for Everton. I think it's been a tough start to the summer for the fans. You're hoping against hope that this doesn't happen again, that we don't end up back in another relegation battle. But you've got all the evidence in front of you is looking at it and going, well, they're losing more players here and they haven't yet added. So how are you getting out of this? So I hope for some positivity soon, whether or not it's in time for the pre-season camp over in France and Switzerland, I don't know. What I would say as well is you will start to see some players coming back. This is small comfort, small solace, but you will start to see some players trickling back from their holidays. I think people like Gomez and Onana are meant to be back soon. So you will start to see a more experienced squad in those training pictures. But there's a lot of work still to be done on this squad, an awful lot of work. And I think it will probably be pretty busy right the way through from now, for me, all the way up to the deadline at the end of August.
Yeah. Well, we all agree it's pretty busy, and it's pretty busy in terms of bringing a bit of quality, and that's for sure, because I think the vast majority of Evertonians could not take another season like what we had last season and the season before. So fingers crossed, we can do something of note and which is positive, and players who we can move on and make some kind of money on, you know, that can aid the cause. But Paddy, appreciate you taking some time on a Monday morning to have a chat with us. Nice to speak to you. Hopefully you're really busy going forward as well, reporting on incoming transfers. But we appreciate everyone obviously listening to this transfer special. We'll be back ourselves, as you know. We put a few more out over the course of the summer before the big kickoff on August the 12th at Goodison Park. So we'll catch you over the next couple of weeks.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.